Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Finn Show,
the smooth talk of the town.
Cool. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and here we are, September 22nd, in the midst of the biggest bailout in the history of mankind. Now, let's talk a little bit about this bailout and where it takes us. So, we'll get to the politics in a minute, but I'll preview what I was going to say here, and that is, last week convinced me this election is over. Obama is going to win this election. I've reassured people out there who are Democratic-leaning, who are liberal, that Obama is going to win many times over the last few months, despite the fact that the polls have gone up and down, that things don't look good, that McCain seemed to be gaining ground, that Sarah Palin seemed to energize the far right or the religious right anyway, all that stuff. And through it all, I've said, don't worry, this will come around, wait till the debates. This last week sealed it. In part, it was McCain's being out to lunch with a comment like, the fundamentals are sound. The economy is fundamentally sound. And I don't remember the exact quote. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but it was a mistake. It was a gaffe, a huge gaffe. We had the meltdown over the next 5 days. You just couldn't be more wrong. And this election's going to be fought on the economy. So as far as I'm concerned, it is over. Let's go back, though, to what's happened this week. So Congress now is trying to write a bill. Now, the stock market dropped another 400 points today. Last week, what happened was, if you look at the way the stocks went over the 5 days, it lost almost 500 points on Monday. Right? This was at the beginning of the day. That was when McCain said the fundamentals were good. And then the Dow dropped 499 points that day, picked up 153 on Tuesday, dropped 447 points on Wednesday, picked up 411 points on Thursday. Can you believe this? Up and down? And then on Friday, it picked up another 360 points and ended up for the week. For the week, it was up 40 points. Because the U.S. announced the bailout, $700 billion bailout. Don't worry about a thing. Wherever you've got your money, whoever's made bad loans, don't worry. The taxpayers will pick it up. So that brought things back. Now, what's happened over the weekend is Republicans and Democrats have come out and said, wait a minute, Mr. Bush and King Paulson, we're not sure we're going to give you this blank check. What happened in the middle of the week, about Wednesday, Treasury Secretary Paulson sat down with the leaders of Congress and sobered them up and said, this could be a meltdown of the entire financial system, the worldwide financial system. And he went so far as to say that we're endangering the entire credit market and credit structure. That is, that small businesses may not be able to get a loan, that credit will get so tight. And what was happening was, even though the rate of return was almost zero, people were investing in U.S. bonds, because you know the U.S. is going to pay back its bonds, its treasury bonds, but they were not investing in other instruments in the private sector because they weren't sure how much bad debt was in those companies. So we get to the weekend, and what happens is some people who are very conservative said, wait a minute, this is not conservatism. This is the biggest socialization of the private enterprise system we've seen. We're going to look like Europe. $700 billion bailout, whatever happened to risk for these folks? If they made bad loans, they should deal with it. Well, the problem is, of course, what people say is these companies are too big to fail. Okay, they're too big to fail. Well, let's go back to, we've run into this before. Chrysler was too big to fail, supposedly. But in retrospect, if you think about it, and if one of the big three auto companies went under, that's not quite the same as in your financial sector, where the ripple effect goes across all these countries and companies. And so it really is a dire situation. So Paulson impressed that on Congress, and Congress said, okay, we're going to act. And the world got the impression they were going to rubber stamp a $700 billion deal. Well, then they saw the paperwork that said, give him carte blanche, let him do what he wants, and don't worry your pretty little heads, Congress. Well, the Congress never goes for that kind of stuff. They don't usually. And they're sensitive to the fact they got rolled on the Iraq War resolution. They got rolled on the Patriot Act, all that stuff. So, and Bush is in a weakened state of presidency. So they want to do the right thing. And we're in the middle of an election. All 435 members of the House of Representatives are running for re-election. Are you kidding me? We're 45 days from this election. This is trouble, right? So everybody's positioning themselves, and everybody says, we don't want to be partisan here. We want to do what's right for the country. Right. So here we are in the middle of this mess, and the far right says, this is not conservatism. This is a move towards socialism. And the left says, wait a minute. We're not giving Bush a blank check. We're not giving you guys this. You know, we've been saying you need regulation on these financial instruments, and Republicans and others and your lobbyists have been convincing us, no, the free enterprise system works best if it's unfettered. And people made these huge profits. What happens is they rolled their risk into riskier and riskier investments. They leveraged their money 30 to 1 instead of the 4 to 1 or 6 to 1 that was recommended and required under previous laws. And now they got to pay the piper. Well, the fact that it's going to cause ripples, some people are saying, let's roll the dice and see what happens. I don't think we can quite do that. But at a minimum, what they seem to be ready to do, that is Congress, is first of all, they're going to do something about executive pay. These golden parachutes that people are getting in the form of $10 million, $20 million, $40 million as you leave. You know, people didn't like it, but they looked the other way when those golden parachutes were given and the company was making hundreds of billion dollars. You could give people, or tens of billion, you could give people $40 million in bonuses or money when they left. But when you're hemorrhaging money and bad debt and you've clearly mismanaged the company, whether you're the CEO or you're just some middle-level executive, this idea that you should get this big golden parachute or get millions as you walk away is rubbing the average American the wrong way. So John McCain was the first on the stump to rail against this. He always also wanted to fire the head of the SEC, of all people. I'm not saying there wasn't some blame there, but let's not single out one person and pretend that it's his fault. McCain was actually a little out of control last week. Of course, he was trying to recover from his gaffe of saying that fundamentals were good. So he was angry. He railed against the SEC chair, wanted to fire him, said that there was greed and theft. I forget how he put it, greed and mismanagement and theft. Basically accused people of wrongdoing without mentioning any names. Obama was much more circumspect. He wanted to see, you know, what the proposal was coming out of the Treasury Department. He was measured in his comments. He didn't go on the attack. Basically, he was a balanced, reasonable leader about these things. Now, McCain's out today saying that he has a plan in place, and McCain's put forth a plan. He says, and Obama hasn't put forth a plan. And so, you know, where is he when you need leadership? You need leadership on these things. Well, I hate to tell you this, John McCain, but it turns out that the country isn't looking to you yet to lead on this financial thing. Basically, the Bush administration is still the president. If Obama were so bold, I mean, when he went to Europe and he went to Iraq and spoke to Petraeus and met with Sarkozy of France and met with the Israeli leaders, people accused him of overstepping his bounds, even though he didn't make any official pronouncements. So he's walking a thin line that McCain doesn't have to walk, apparently, I guess because the media, which the right likes to say is biased against McCain, it's actually pretty kind to him most of the time, if you have noticed. So when we had this problem with Georgia a month or so ago, and Russia invaded after Georgia kind of provoked him, McCain basically came out and said, I think I speak for all Americans when I say we are all Georgians. And he ratcheted up the rhetoric. He was bellicose, more than the Bush administration was. And I'm thinking, where are the critics who said that Obama was overreaching and pretending, acting like he was president on his recent trip? Because that's what McCain was doing. And that's what McCain was doing last week. So anyway, McCain has a plan out. Obama doesn't. I don't think it'll hurt Obama. We have the first debate coming up this weekend. Can you imagine what this is going to be like? So here's what's interesting. We are looking at a debate that is supposedly going to be on foreign policy. Okay? Well, I got some news for you. They can start on foreign policy if they want, but it's going to very quickly move to the economy. There's just no way they can spend 90 minutes on foreign policy. I'll bet in the first 3 to 5 minutes, both candidates will address the economy. And they'll tie it to national security and the globalized economy, and we're all interdependent. Of course, that's more of a Democratic message than a Republican message. But I just predict that's what'll happen. And the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio will be back right after this. Get your hands off that mouse. The Andy Finn Show will be right back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah!
I've often thought that if our brains got physically larger the more we exercised them, that instead of going to the gym to pump iron, people would go to the library to pump ideas in order to impress the opposite sex.
Look at the brain on that stud.
Have you ever seen a brain that big?
Look at that guy. He's huge.
I gotta start working out my head.
Wow. I'd like to wake up next to that brain every morning.
So tune in the Andy Finn Show and grow your brain. It's the only one you've got.
Listen to the Andy Finn Show at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and let's talk the campaign and the coming week. So Congress may get a deal by Friday. They may not, but Friday night we have the first of three presidential debates. Now, I've been saying for months that this election is going to come down to the debates, and when the country sees Barack Obama standing next to John McCain, my liberal friends, my Democratic friends have nothing to worry about, in the same way that the country saw Ronald Reagan standing next to Jimmy Carter. They said, hey, he's taller. I think he'd make a better president. And that's what'll happen with Barack Obama. It's actually more than that. What happens is the country's concerned. Carter tried to raise the specter that Reagan, you don't know what he's going to do. He's an unknown. He might be dangerous. And the country took a look at Reagan. He was calm, cool, and collected, matter of fact. And they said, hey, this guy can be president. He stacks up well against the other man up there on stage. The same thing will happen with Obama and McCain. McCain is real good on talking points at the Rick Warren Forum a month or so ago, if you didn't see that. What basically happened was Rick Warren asked a series of questions, and McCain went right to his talking points, the stuff he says on the stump, the stuff you hear night after night. And he had pat answers. And he had short answers because he took definite stands on issues like abortion, like when life begins, like a variety of things that play to the social issues on the right. Whereas what Obama was doing is, in part, he was playing defense. This was an away game. He was in an element, fundamentalist Christians was the, well, in part the audience, but certainly the base that was mostly was going to tune into this initially. And so he chose his words very carefully, and he didn't sound as definite, and he sounded nuanced, but he didn't sound like he was as sure of himself, because he was trying to explain the details of his position and parse his words. Well, A, that's his style in part, but he needs to tighten that up. In the debate, you get more points for going to your talking points and having a pat answer than you do for saying, well, let's explore this for a minute, Mr. Questioner. On the one hand, you could say X, and on the other hand, you could say Y. Well, what I choose is a combination of X and Y. No, the country doesn't want to hear that. They want to hear what they heard from Ronald Reagan and what they've heard from George Bush, which is, this is black, this is white, and we're going over here. I'm sure of myself, and that's what we're going to do. So Obama needs to tighten up his answers, and he'll be in better shape. Now, the debate's supposed to be about foreign policy. It's going to be interesting to see how much it's about the economy. My guess is they'll both touch on the economy and then go back to foreign policy. Well, the big issue that's going to come up is the surge and then the original Iraq War. If you know how this goes, I'll review the bidding in case you don't. But basically, McCain's been harping for months about the surge and says, why can't Barack Obama admit that the surge worked? And I was for it all along, and I was right, and he has bad judgment. And Obama says, well, two things, Mr. McCain. First, the surge hasn't, quote, worked in that, first of all, we didn't get the political reconciliation yet that we claimed was the basis for the surge. The idea was surge the troops so that you can have a time, a breathing space to have a political settlement. But secondly, Obama correctly points out, and but this is a nuanced argument, it's hard to get it across to the average American, but he correctly points out that there were several factors that led to the reducing of violence in Iraq. It was the Sunni awakening, that is, Sunnis realized they didn't want to be dominated by the Al-Qaeda in Iraq, terrorists among them, the Sunni terrorists among them, who started to tell them how to dress and how to go to church and go to mosque and how to run their shops and how to pay attention to Sharia law. And they said, we don't want that. So they drove them out and they turned on them. Secondly, when the Sunnis who had been insurgents turned on Al-Qaeda and Iraq insurgents, the U.S. put them on the payroll and we've been paying, I think is it $300 million a month? I don't know how big the number is, but we've been paying, 85,000 people or something, $300 a month. Maybe it's a bigger number than that. We've been paying a lot of people, and Iraq's going to have to take over those payments. And frankly, Iraq has got a concern about having that many Sunnis on the payroll as police or soldiers because basically the majority of Iraq is Shia, and that's the basis for the trouble to begin with, and it's the reason why I've always believed there's going to be bloodshed in Iraq when there's a power vacuum, and the power vacuum happens as soon as we leave. And it's unrealistic to think, oh, we'll stay until there's no power vacuum. No, there's tens of billions of dollars of oil money at stake, and that's too much money. That's too tempting a target. They don't have the democratic institutions in place. They aren't going to be there for decades. They don't have the instincts for democracy that you might have in another country. It's more of a tribal situation. So when there's a power vacuum, and there will be a power vacuum, that is, there aren't enough troops to keep a lid on things. When we leave, there's likely to be bloodshed. Now, what George Bush has done, and I've been saying this for 3 years that this is coming, is that Bush has basically seen the same thing coming and said, not on my watch. I'm going to maintain troops at a strength of 130,000 or more right until I leave office. Then whatever happens, if it comes unraveled, I can at least say it didn't happen on my watch. Someone else made the fateful mistake of drawing down troops. Well, eventually, you have to draw down troops, and I'm predicting there'll be violence when we do. I hope there isn't. I've always been afraid, and I've always suspected there will be serious violence whenever we leave. No matter how many years we stay, it'll be there. If Obama gets elected, he starts drawing down and there's violence, of course, the Republicans and the Bush administration will point the finger and say it's his fault. And, of course, that's pretty absurd. Bush got us into this multi-year war that was supposed to be over in a matter of weeks. So that's how I've always seen it going down. We'll have to see how it plays out. But basically, McCain's going to make the argument that he was right about the surge and Obama has no judgment. But Obama's already previewed his argument this week also. He's come out and said, John McCain, he didn't say he has amnesia. How did he put it? He said, John McCain is rewriting history, however he said it. He wants you to believe that Iraq, the situation in Iraq started with the surge. He said, no, we've been at war for 5 years. And the initial decision was a mistake. I was opposed to it. McCain was in favor. And I'll go even one step further. Not only was McCain in favor, like George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, he cannot admit that it was a mistake to go in. Now, something like between 58% and 65% of the country says it was a mistake to go into Iraq. They see that now. Now that we're there, they want us to extract ourselves carefully, but they believe it was a mistake. Well, that is exactly what Obama is saying, and so a large percentage of the country resonates to that opinion. So we'll have to see how this plays out, but Obama's going to make the case that McCain not only couldn't make the call, the right call in the beginning, but he still can't admit now that he was wrong to go in. McCain still says we did the right thing because who would want Saddam back in power? Don't you admit he's a bad guy, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and it's just a mistake to throw good money after bad, to waste 4,000 lives, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where the foreign policy debate's going to go. McCain's going to claim he's got the judgment and Obama doesn't. I'm sorry, the experience and Obama doesn't, and Obama's going to claim he has judgment, and McCain's going to try and thwart his judgment. What's going to be interesting is the temperament, and I don't mean that McCain's going to fly off the handle. You know, a lot of the analysts have been saying, oh, Obama will try and provoke him into doing something rash because he can be a hothead and all that. I don't think that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is Obama's going to show himself competent. McCain will acquit himself well. Either one of them is capable of a gaffe. I think McCain has had many, many more gaffes this elections year than Obama has, although if you listen to a right-wing radio, you'd swear that Obama had all the gaffes and McCain had none. But I think all it's going to come down to is that if Obama gets a draw out of the first debate, which is foreign policy, that's the equivalent of a win. Okay, McCain has to win this thing. I've heard some Republican operatives say that expectations are low for McCain because he's not as good a debater and Obama's such a good speaker. That is just trying to game the system before we start here. Basically, Obama's the one who's going to be under the microscope. Like Reagan in 80, the country's looking at this person. Some people, for the first time, I know that's hard to believe. The election's been on a long time. But many people have not yet started paying attention. Some of the swing voters, some of the people who are only casual voters, are just now starting to pay attention. Yes, they got a rough idea of Obama and are thinking, oh, I can't trust him, or I can, and a rough idea of McCain. But for a lot of people, their real opinion of these guys is going to come in the debates. And the first debate is crucial. The other two will help solidify the reputation, whether it's positive or negative. And we'll go from there and see what happens. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But I believe that on Friday, Obama is going to take the second step towards winning this election. The first step was last week when the playing field shifted. It's now a home game for the Democrats. Republicans seem to be making some gains, not just in the presidential election, but in senatorial and congressional races. Now that it's shifted to the election and not foreign affairs as much, this is a home game for the Democrats. The economy should be their turf normally. Domestic issues should be their turf normally. And Republicans have been in office. They've had Congress most of the last 8 years, and they've had the White House the last 8 years. The country is likely to blame George W. Bush and Republicans for the mess we're in economically. Obama has to be credible and project confidence and show that he can be president. And this election is his to lose. And with that, that's all we need to say about this. That'll do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. I'll be back next Monday night to talk a little bit more about the election. We'll have the first debate analysis from that. And until then, you can read my blog and my writings at andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. Until then, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.